Hello, this is your SunSounds volunteer reader, Michael Lee in Flagstaff with the Prescott Daily Courier. Today I'll be reading articles dated December 15th, 2024. Some of today's headlines are Prescott's revised general plan moves forward to public hearing phase, Prescott Army veteran father and founder of Junior Ranger Program honored with national award, and law enforcement offers ways to stay safe using gift cards this holiday season. Our first article, Prescott's Revised General Plan Moves Forward to Public Hearing Phase, by Cindy Barks. More than 2 years of committee meetings, two public open house events, and 400 public comments regarding the City of Prescott's General Plan update culminated this week when the General Plan Review Committee voted to send its revised version onto its next round of city review. During a meeting on Wednesday, December 11th, the General Plan Review Committee voted 8-2 to forward the draft to the Prescott Planning and Zoning Commission, and then to the Prescott City Council for review. The first Planning and Zoning Commission review will occur on January 9th, 2025, with subsequent meetings planned for January 30th and February 13th if needed. Then the City Council will begin its review on February 25th, and will continue the discussion on March 11th and 25th. Later in 2025, the updated Prescott General Plan is expected to go to a vote of Prescott City voters for approval, likely in the August 5th city primary. The decision to move the draft forward came despite some remaining concerns about aspects of the plan, especially with the anti-discrimination section that had been discussed extensively at recent meetings. The committee ultimately decided to leave in the introductory section, which states that the city does not condone discrimination or harassment of individuals based on identifying characteristics such as race, sex, ethnicity, sexual orientation, gender expression or identity, religious practice, spiritual practice, age, or mental and physical ability, and to let the city council decide whether to retain the section. During a meeting in November, City Councilwoman Kathy Rusing had expressed concerns about the language, which she said does not belong in a document that should be essentially a land use, land planning document. She added that the language will become a flashpoint when we sell this to the voters. After that meeting, community planner Tammy DeWitt said the city received 137 comments about the anti-discrimination language, most of which were in favor of leaving the language in the draft general plan. The language was also a matter of discussion for audience members at this week's committee meeting. Local resident Michelle Hamer maintained that the language is not needed in the general plan. "This city is not racist, and we do not need that kind of talk, especially in the general plan," she told the committee. She added that if someone does have a problem with discrimination, they have other avenues for addressing it, including the county and the state. "Let's keep that kind of talk out of there. Please reconsider," Hamer said. But local resident Jim Hebling voiced support for leaving the language in the general plan, and he read a statement from the Martin Luther King Peace and Justice Committee to that effect. Hebling noted that the anti-discrimination language in the draft general plan was devised to give agency to people who we know have been unfairly treated in our city, because members of our committee were among those people. He added that 133 of the 247 people who responded to a survey indicated that they were made to feel unwelcome in Prescott. "There's a segment of the population that needs to hear they are part of this community that plans that the plan represents," Hebling said, adding, "I want to thank the committee for keeping the statement in and pushing forward." Another audience member voiced concerns about the general plan's focus on creating more affordable housing in Prescott, maintaining that high-density affordable housing would negatively affect Prescott's small-town atmosphere. Hamer also voiced concerns about sections in the plan on initiatives such as dark sky compliance, tree city designation, and affordable housing, which she said would result in overregulation that would ultimately transform Prescott into something resembling one giant HOA. The agenda for this week's meeting included items for review of the comments received during the 60-day public comment period, which started on September 23rd and ended on November 21st, as well as to decide whether to move the revised plan onto public hearings. DeWitt reported that the comment period had generated about 400 comments that were submitted on the city's general plan virtual meeting room at https://planprescott.com and by email. After going through several remaining issues for possible wording changes, the committee agreed to move the draft plan forward with the revisions that were made along the way. Committee member Ralph Hess opposed the motion because he said the committee should conduct one more meeting to allow for review of the final draft with the various revisions added. But committee member Tom Riley pushed for moving forward. "I trust the staff is going to put this together the way we talked about it," Riley said. In addition, he said the individual committee members would have the opportunity to review the final draft and ensure that the revisions were made as discussed. Eight of the committee members voted for moving ahead, with two, Hess and committee member James McCarver, voting against the motion. DeWitt added that members of the General Plan Review Committee would be notified of the upcoming planning and zoning and city council meetings and would have the opportunity to comment at those meetings. She told the committee that in order for the updated general plan to get on the August 5th ballot, the city council would need to approve the draft by March 25th. This week's draft approval wrapped up nearly 2.5 years of work by the General Plan Review Committee, which conducted its first meeting in August of 2022. The committee met regularly in the ensuing months to update the city's current 2015 plan, with a revised version featuring elements that have been required by the state, including topics such as land use, circulation, transportation, open space, growth areas, environmental planning, plan policy for developments to provide public services and benefits, and water sources. Our second article, Prescott Army veteran, father, and founder of Junior Ranger Program, honored with National Award, by Nancy Hudson. Sean Underhill is the kind of dad who wants his son, daughter, and their friends to jump in mud puddles, climb trees, skip rocks, hike trails, and enjoy eating s'mores over a wilderness campfire. He, too, wants them to treasure nature such that they embrace cleaning up trash that they find on walks in the forest. And if they're going on a picnic at a local park, he wants them to know they must only bring in what they're willing to take out, so that all that's left behind are their footprints. Underhill embraces the motto of national, state, and local outdoor educators, advocates, and nature ethicists: leave no trace. For Underhill's efforts, the volunteer city park ranger and founder of Prescott's now-year-old Junior Ranger Program, linked with the city's Community Nature Center and its Nature Niños Educational Outreach Program, was chosen by the National Leave No Trace organization as its 2024 State Advocate of the Year Award. Since 2023, Underhill has served as the organization's volunteer state advocate in Arizona. Leave No Trace honors individuals, businesses, agencies, and nonprofits dedicated to its mission to protect the nation's natural resources. Through these awards, we celebrate the members of our community who go above and beyond for the Leave No Trace movement and inspire others to do the same. Part of Underhill's award stems from his promulgating through his advocacy of the 7 key principles of the Leave No Trace organization: plan ahead and prepare, travel and camp on durable surfaces, dispose of waste properly, leave what you find, minimize campfire impacts, respect wildlife, and be considerate of others. Those are all principles Underhill teaches and practices through the Junior Ranger Program that is available to families through the Nature Niños and other Community Nature Center programs. The award states that Underhill is passionate about educating his community and spearheaded efforts to create new trails for the Boys and Girls Club of Central Arizona, located in Prescott. In 2024, the award press release stated that Underhill educated thousands of children and families over 20 different events. What an incredible human being, declared Ellen Bashore, the city's park ranger and manager of the city community nature center, who through an interdepartmental agreement with the city is the outdoor learning coordinator for the Prescott Unified School District. There is no one more deserving of this award. Bashore said she met Underhill 2 years ago as a nature-centric parent with a master's degree from Northern Arizona University in Park and Recreation Management. He then joined the park ranger team as an AmeriCorps VISTA, where he embarked on research into starting the Junior Ranger program. From the start, Bashore said she was inspired by this young father and United States Army veteran, determined to engage families in his home community with nature activities rooted in the Leave No Trace practices. He tapped into his graphic design talents to create the Junior Ranger workbook that includes super sweet park creatures such as the desert partridge, a javelina, deer, and even a toad, she noted. For the last year, Underhill's full-time job has been as the Yavapai County Community Health Services Community Navigation Program Coordinator at the Yavapai County Connections Center. In that role, Underhill works to help adults who have been incarcerated transition back into the life in the community. Bashore said she hopes he will at some point be able to blend his multifaceted skills, experience, and passion for nature into a permanent parks and recreation management role. Until then, though, she said, this city benefits from his constant willingness to donate his time, talent, and resources to growing future stewards of the natural world. A modest man, Underhill said he is honored by the accolades for doing what he loves, playing outdoors with his children, Quinn, 10, and Lucy, 7, along with his wife, Jillian. He said he hopes his passion that infuses his own children's curiosity about Prescott's cherished, historic, and unique places sparks other families to spend time together on similar explorations. He, too, is an advocate for affordability and accessibility so that everyone in the city, including those with physical or mental disabilities, language barriers, or who might be living on limited incomes, can access all the city has to offer. The Prescott Junior Ranger City Passport lists 21 different places, including some unique to Prescott businesses, parks, and museums, for potential visits. To earn a Junior Ranger badge, children need to get stamps for at least 7 of those places. Choices include the Charlotte Hall Museum, the Highland Center for Natural History, Teufel, the Hike Shack, the Prescott Public Library, and the Heritage Park Zoological Sanctuary. To date, Underhill said he and the park ranger team have distributed some 2,000 Junior Ranger workbooks. Funding for all of the park ranger outdoor learning and outreach programs comes through local business and nonprofit sponsors and individual donations. What was motivated by a desire to build a better place for his own children to live is now what Underhill is clear in his driving force for all kids and their families. In so doing, Underhill said he hopes he also teaches sound principles that help future generations know how to take better care of our land. He's our local celebrity dad, Bashore declared. He uses his work time and personal time to give back to the community. He's just an amazing, wonderful, talented human being who we're really lucky to have in our community. You can hear Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or smart home device. Just ask the device to open Sun Sounds of Arizona. Our next article, Law Enforcement Offers Ways to Stay Safe Using Gift Cards This Holiday Season, by Deborah Winters. According to the Prescott Valley Police Department, PVPD, Christmas is the season for scammers and thefties, criminals who take advantage of your gift card purchases. And gift card scams are one of the fastest-growing frauds affecting consumers today, but they must be purchased carefully, said Ian Thulin, PVPD Community Services Specialist. A popular way scammers and thefties can pull one over on you is they take the gift cards home that are in a case or an envelope and they carefully take them out. Next, they cut the tops off and put the card back in while re-gluing the case or envelope to make it seem as if they haven't been tampered with. Additionally, they will scratch off the cover of the back off the back of the card to retrieve the number, explained Thulin. Once the cards are put back in the store, a shopper will purchase them without knowing what was done to them, therefore giving all the money to the scammer, he added. According to Fraud Norfleet, Yavapai County Sheriff's Office fraud investigator, gift cards are a scammer's favorite way to steal money. Gift cards are for gifts, not for payments. If someone calls with urgent news or a convincing story, and then pressures you to pay them by buying gift cards, and then giving them the codes on the back of the card, stop. It's a scam, Norfleet vehemently warns. He went on to say that scammers like gift cards because once they have the code on the back, which the victim was convinced by the scammer to relinquish, the money is gone and almost impossible to trace. Scammers like to play on your emotions as well as a sense of urgency. But knowing how these scams work can help you avoid them, and you can help even more by passing on the information to people you know, he added. The PVPD also suggests a few other ways to stay safe this season. When buying a gift card that is fully exposed, make sure the numbers on the back of the card are not scratched off, as many stores sell a variety of gift cards, and that they do not check them at all. You're tuned to Sun Sounds of Arizona, and you're listening to the Prescott Daily Courier. Our next article comes from Days Past. Jerome's Charlie Hong, The Rise and Fall of a Chinese Businessman, by Marjorie Sente. In May 1899, when a fire swept through Jerome's business district, Charlie Hong lost his restaurant, one of 12 Chinese restaurants reported to be destroyed. Hong's loss was estimated at $1,000, according to the May 20, 1899 San Francisco call. He leased land, constructed an adobe building with a stone foundation, and quickly reestablished his business. Hong's new restaurant, later called the English Kitchen, now Bobby D's Barbecue, was open and serving food before many other businesses in Jerome could rebuild. By August 1899, an ad in the Weekly Journal Miner stated that his was the place for a good meal when in Jerome. He was also in charge of feeding miners working at the United Verde Copper Company's Iron King Mine at Equator Hill and providing meals for prisoners held in the Yavapai County Jail in Jerome. In addition to the restaurant in Jerome, Hong owned a cattle ranch in the Verde Valley and ran restaurants and boarding houses in some of the surrounding mining towns and smelters. In 1901, he received a contract to clean Jerome's streets. At one time, Hong was one of the biggest property owners and payer of taxes in Jerome. He did business with the Bashford Burmester Company, located in Prescott, from a notation on an envelope sent to Hong to the BB Company. It appeared that he paid them $100 on his account. The company frequently extended a line of credit to business owners and individuals. However, life was never easy for Hong and his restaurant employees because people tried to take advantage of them. A restaurant customer would eat a meal and say she did not have the money to pay for it. Hong frequently gave the person the meal and told him not to return unless he could pay. However, the individual usually returned, saying that Hong had extended him credit or that he could eat for free. One incident reported in the December 29, 1900 Arizona Republican described the ensuing fight between Charlie's employees Lee Hong and Scott Shannon after Charlie told Lee that he had not extended credit to Shannon. Shannon hit Lee with a syrup pitcher, cutting his face so badly that it required medical attention. Shannon was jailed in Prescott and bound over for the grand jury with a bond of $1,000. The reporter observed, "Too many men attempted to impose upon the Chinamen because they are Chinamen." He also noted that Shannon would likely spend time in the territorial penitentiary in Yuma. Hong endured a rough year in 1909. In May, Cayanto Lopez, a Mexican employee by the United Verde Copper Company, dynamited Hong's restaurant, wrecking it. Speculation raised two possible motives. Lopez attempted to murder the president of the Western Federation of Miners, or he was upset over losing a fight in the restaurant. Lopez was convicted of the crime, receiving a 10-year sentence in a territorial penitentiary. Hong's restaurant remained open, but soon he was subject to ill-favored news when a new restaurant had the backing of the Jerome Mining News, a local newspaper edited by Bill Adams. Editor Adams claimed that Chinese men were stealing discarded meat and serving it in their restaurants. Then a headline in the October 2, 1909 Jerome Mining News read, "Found maggots in soup in Hong's restaurant." In July, Hong was ordered to be deported to China. He had visited his homeland, leaving through San Francisco, a registered port, but had returned through Guaymas, an unregistered port of entry for aliens. His attorney successfully appealed the deportation order, and in December 1909, Hong received word that he was allowed to stay in the United States. He stated that he would live in the United States forever, but sometime after 1910, Hong permanently returned to China. Days Past is a collaborative project with the Charlotte Hall Museum and the Prescott Corral of Westerners International. This and other Days Past articles are also available at archives.charlottehallmuseum.org/articles/days-past-articles/1. The public is encouraged to submit proposed articles and inquiries to dayspast@charlottehallmuseum.org. Please contact SHM Research Center for Reference Desk at 928-277-2003 or via email at archivesrequest@charlottehallmuseum.org for information or assistance with photo requests. Our last article today, A Journey Through Time, The American Cowboy, Wild and Free, by Ron Anderson. One of the most popular shows on TV throughout the past year has been the Kevin Costner epic, Yellowstone. Yellowstone focuses on a well-to-do family in present-day Montana who is dealing with the politics of the day as well as hard work that it takes to run a large ranch. The diversity of characters and the real-life challenges that they face make the show compelling and leaves you anxious to see the next episode. The series is expanded into an additional two series called 1883 and 1923. The history of the Montana ranch starts in the 1800s Old West and progresses through the 1920s up to the present day. The characterizations in all three epics are great. You get to know the characters like they are currently friends of yours. So what makes these shows so popular? They're centered around cowboys and the cowboy culture for the large part, and heaven knows we've all seen more cowboy shows than we can even count. The answer lies in the cowboy culture itself, a way of life that we evidently never tire of. When we think of the cowboy lifestyle, we cannot but envision a wild and free existence that is unfettered by the pressures of modern living. The cowboy lives his or her own life the way he or she desires, without the nagging pressure of mortgages or credit card bills arriving every month. No smog or traffic jams to contend with either, rather the freedom of the wide open spaces and the reliance on himself to make his daily way as he sees fit. An enviable lifestyle in many ways. Let's take a look at the culture of the cowboy. A good place to start is with what could be called the code of the cowboy. A cowboy, a real cowboy, keeps his word to others, does not make someone else do all of the work, never talks down to anyone, finishes his work if it takes all night, respects other folks' property, takes care of his horse before he eats his dinner, watches the direction that the wind is blowing so he does not blow dust into anyone else's face, so to speak, respects others for what they are, not who they are, never knocks down someone else's fence, even if it's in his way, is respectful and mannerly to ladies, shies away from office jobs, big cities, and pretentious individuals, and more. The American cowboy culture has fascinated millions of people for decades, in this country and around the world. Cowboy movies have been popular in Japan and Germany, as well as numerous other countries. It's always interesting to hear John Wayne speaking Japanese when handling bad guys. Cowboy reenactment groups have even sprung up in some European countries. Living in the Prescott area puts us right in the middle of cowboy country, and it offers us a proud, interesting, and purely American heritage. Thousands of tourists from around the world visit our area yearly to get a taste of the Old West and the cowboys who made it famous. In articles to follow, we'll look into the Chuckwagon Fair, cowboy talking, ranch ladies, rodeo cowboys and cowgirls, and more. So, saddle up and hit the trails with us. Ron Anderson is a local historian, lecturer, and author. His historical interests cover numerous subjects and decades, ranging from the Old West to World War II. I'm your Sun Sounds volunteer reader, Michael Lee. This was the Prescott Daily Courier. Thank you for listening. Everybody going crazy, praying for Christmas. Seems to me that humanity has forgotten what this time was about. All your materialistic presents, paying all of your attention to the wrong religion. You gotta stop making it all about Jesus. The true meaning of the season is the Druidic solstice ritual. Before it got nicked by the Christians, we were ho-ho-hoing around Stonehenge. The true meaning of the season didn't used to be caroling and Christmas cheer. Take me back to the time when they did things right, like a libel sacrifice underneath the mistletoe. Like Grilla the Goblin Witch, who climbs out of a ditch to eat your kids. Forget the coziness and good-willing. We need more state-sanctioned ritual killing. Sign my petition. I only need 100,000 to get it debated in Parliament. The true meaning of the season is a pagan rite of Saturnalia. The 7 days of letting God do ritually whatever he liked. Sacrifice, true meaning of the season. My pagan friends, how could we forget the tradition of Mary Lloyd at Sanguinoid, where they get a dead horse's head and take it round the town on a stick. They'd even put it in a cute bonnet and take it up to someone's door and sing loudly to the owner who's forced to let everybody in the house, including the horse. Christmas sucks less.